This is Scott Richman.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, a good Sunday morning, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good Sunday morning these days. You know, the economic condition of this country is very perplexing, and it's affecting everybody. And today on the show, we're going to have one of our best guests on economics, Dr. Robertino Sonora, share with us his take on what's going on with tariffs and with interest rates and with prices and inflation and public debt and all those things that seem like nebulous concepts until you go take a look at your 401k in the past week or so. Stock market had one of the most precipitous drops in 3 days in modern times. You know, the president's senior advisor, who's a felon on economics, Peter Navarro, is a huge tariffs person, anti-China person, and is crafting a strategy that most economists and most public officials oppose. In fact, even Elon Musk, our Doge leader, called Peter Navarro a moron on Tuesday. So if you like Elon Musk and believe him, you got a moron advising the president about economic policy. And we're going to try to make some sense of all of that. Is he a moron, or is his voice and his clarity on this issue going to carry the day, and somehow America is going to get better by raising prices on all consumer goods in the short run?
To answer your first question, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's usually a duck. Secondly, I'm looking forward to our guest, Tino Sonora. We'll make heads or tails of all of this. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with return guest Robertino Sonora, professor of finance at the University of Montana's College of Business.
Tino, it's good to see you. I need you like I need a psychiatrist right now to help me through this economic roller coaster that we've been on for the last 3 months. It wasn't as if, the administration didn't say, this is what we're going to do. But a lot of people didn't really believe this is what they're going to do, because historically what they're doing is very dangerous. And so far, I think in the first 3 months of this administration, the stock market has dropped more than any time in modern history in the first 3 months of any presidency.
Well, so, good to see you guys again. Sorry, it is interesting time, shall we say? But we said about what? Right when the inauguration, around inauguration, we'd come back and check in at 100 days, and we are at 100 days. And I think this is nothing that I could have envisioned.
Period. Right.
Yes, he said we're going to raise tariffs. Yes, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Yes, we're going to, clear out the entire VA. Yes, we're going to do this. But I don't think anybody really kind of believed him. That he would go to this extreme. So I think, when I was so naive 3 months ago, I think we all were very naive 3 months ago, we kind of were looking, well, yeah, there's going to be some fluctuations. Yeah, there's going to be some volatility. Yeah, some people are probably going to, on the margins, lose their jobs in federal government. A couple people will end up, they'll round up all of the illegal immigrants who are in jail and send them back. But what's going on now is, from an economics perspective, it's unheard of. Just before we started, I was comparing the drop during the financial crisis in the NASDAQ, and it took a year and a half for the NASDAQ to drop 1,500 points. Obviously, the level of the NASDAQ was much lower, so in percentage change terms, it's pretty substantial. But let's just do 1,500 points in a year and a half. And in the past 3 days, the NASDAQ has dropped almost 2,000 points in 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, no one could have foreseen this.
And the other exchanges are following suit. It's not just NASDAQ sitting out there.
Correct.
So let's begin with the big issue and talk about it. I'm going to take a couple minutes to put it in historic perspective. And then we'll talk about, what do we think is going to happen with tariffs? Most Americans just don't understand tariffs. They are In fact, and you can correct me at any point that I'm wrong, Tino, they are taxes on Americans paid by Americans.
Correct.
You
That's
know,
correct.
we're imposing, at one point, Trump is talking about 100% tariff on Chinese goods as sort of, what has been described as economic diplomacy of some sort, scare the heck out of everybody and see if we can cut a better deal. Well, a
Yeah.
lot of people are, saying, well, we can, we don't have to cut a better deal. We have other customers, we have other ways to do things, we have other logistical routes and whatever. But historically, tariffs have been around since George Washington. George Washington imposed the first set of tariffs in 1790. And they went from between 1790 and 1860, they went from 20% to 60% every time in history. There are two or three other major occurrences in 1934, in 1890, and a number of other places. When they try to push them up to 60%, which they did, they had to take them back down because the repercussions was so catastrophic. In fact, a little factoid was the U.S. Coast Guard was created in 1790 to collect taxes. That's what the U.S. Coast Guard was created for. So we had that. We had in I think 1890s. We had McKinley, who issues a whole set of taxes. And we all know what happened, those of us who are historians, happened to McKinley. One is 5 years of unemployment in excess of 10%, a crashing economy, and in the second term, he got assassinated as a result of his economic policies, by and large.
Yeah, and you could probably argue that the 1907 financial crisis roots were also part of the whole tariff increase in tariffs. So, and I'm looking at a chart right now, and in 1900, tariffs hit over about 26, 27%. We had a financial crisis in 1907, of course. That was a crisis. It was kind of responsible for creating the Federal Reserve Bank and a variety of other institutions, and then kind of led us on a very rapid decline in tariffs between 1900, 1910 to roughly World War I. And then we started ramping them up again. And then we get into the Smoot-Hawley stuff, which
Right. But it
obviously
wasn't until 1913 that we created an income tax in the United States. That was
exactly. So we
sort
started
of
financing exactly, right.
right. And since then, the tariffs, by and large, have been about 5%.
Since the end of World War II. So let's call
Yeah.
that the Pax Americana. The United States dollar becomes a de facto international currency for transactions. And so from that point on, also it also was the creation of a couple of institutions, right, of globalization institutions. So you had the World Bank, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund were both created in 1948. And then it was also the roots of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which was basically a precursor to the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And that sort of ushered in a period of globalization, primarily in goods and services trade. So, and part of the American Pax Americana was that America was going to reduce some of its tariffs, reduce tariffs in order to help the rest of the world develop. That was part
Right.
of
I mean, there's more to tariffs. I mean, tariffs have a three-prong purpose. And what I have found in my working, in international trade for most of my career, you never have all three happening at the same time in the right direction. It just doesn't work that way. They're for collecting, they're for taxes to raise revenue, but there's a little bit of misplaced information about who's paying for this.
correct.
Yeah, it's Americans paying for it.
It's America's paid for it. And of course, the foreign country who has a tariff levied against them sees, if Guatemala raised 100% tariffs, most countries wouldn't care because Guatemala is such a small market that they don't see a big, huge decline in demand for their exports. But the
Right.
United States raises tariffs. The countries don't pay for it in dollar terms. They pay for it in reduced demand for their goods and services. So
Right. Right.
that can actually, which we'll talk about this kind of interesting bifurcation in inflation rates that's a possibility coming up, but we can talk about that in a minute. But
Sure.
you're exactly right that the other countries see decline in demand for their exports. And so that for some countries, that can be a pretty substantial hit because exports makes up a very large percentage of
Right. And in some
GDP.
cases, if you're a multinational global powerhouse, you might get the supplier to cut his prices, or cover some of the tariffs. But if you're not, you're not going to get that. So
No.
the other issue that sort of overlaps this is this concept of import substitution, which is a protective barrier. You know,
Yep.
the president has said, and other leaders have said, we're getting screwed by the steel industry. We've lost jobs. If we raise the tariffs, we're going to be able to help one generate more revenue for our industries here and create jobs, which is the third piece. Those three things never happen. You don't make a lot of money off of the taxes and create jobs and build your industry altogether by raising taxes, by tariffs. It just never has happened in the history of tariffs since 1790. So, we're in a position. I heard a very interesting comment just today. We're recording this earlier in the week, Scott, from Tim Cook from Apple. He was on, and I caught a piece of what he was saying, and he said, all this complaint about China, all the stuff going to China is no longer the low-cost market in the world. But we turned to China for two other reasons. And this is him speaking as head of Apple. We turned to them for the skills of their labor force. They have a very skilled labor force to do the kind of IT work that we need, and the concentration of the labor force. They can have thousands of these people in one place. So even though they're not as, it's not as inexpensive as Bangladesh, or Cambodia to do business. China, is more expensive, but it's balanced because they have the technological ability to do the stuff that needs to get done. And that's why China has become what it is. It's not going to change. It's not going to change whether we try to create it or not. If we build an iPhone in the United States, it's going to cost $10,000.
Well, again, let's think about what an iPhone. It's not when an iPhone gets tariffed. I mean, how do we tariff this? Because the iPhone has components from about 20 or 30 different countries in it. So, do you
Right.
have a tariff on the phone itself? Do you have a tariff on the value added that was done by the actual assembly plant, which are now moving to Vietnam? Because, as you said,
Right.
China's labor force is actually getting too costly for assembly, so now it's moving to Vietnam.
Right.
So we, Trump claims we have a, well, let's talk about that calculation later, but let's just say that that's true. Now they claim to have a 90% tariff rate on American exports, but I mean, as I saw an article the other day, like the iPhone's going to be $3,500. Now I don't know how they came up with that number. I don't know.
Right.
It's like individually
Well,
determined,
if
individually
I'm
marked.
working in the if I'm working in international trade and I'm advising, any country or any company, let's just say we're talking about China, I'm going to say, well, who has the lowest taxes that can do some of the work? Maybe it's India, because we have a relationship with Modi. We're not taxing India at any, we're close to the rate that we're taxing China and Vietnam and these other places. So I'll just finish 90% of the product here, ship it to India, and let India send it to the United States.
Well, and that's exactly right. That's why these tariffs that were basically quote unquote calculated are kind of meaningless. And in fact, probably the only reason that India has a smaller tariff than China does is literally a function of the fact that they might have a smaller trade deficit with us than
Right,
China
right.
does. But when you look at the calculation, of course, it's being bandied about quite a bit. What the calculation was. I did a little parlor game with a friend of mine the other night and just said, pulled out my cell phone and said, I'll give me a country. I'll tell you what the Trump administration it claims the tariff rate will be. And I can give it to you in like 12 seconds. But no, you're exactly right. The global supply chain has become so complicated. It has become so intertwined that it's impossible to extract. I mean, yeah, I might import my transmission from Mexico, but the bearings might have come from Cambodia, and it's like, well,
Right.
how do we figure this out? If it even if 100%, 99% of the thing was built in Mexico, and you have one little piece that was made in Cambodia, now
Right.
your tariff structure is a little bit more complicated than it was if you're tariffing by individual component.
Right.
And then going back to the car industry, my understanding is like Ford, GM, these kinds of guys treat North America as a country, not three countries, right? We have a free trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. Used to be called NAFTA. Trump then put a couple different semicolons in the original NAFTA legislation, called it the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement. But we're supposed to have free trade between these three countries, and we signed a contract, we signed a treaty basically that states that. But you know, it's very, the international global markets have become so intertwined.
Right.
Everybody's dependent upon each other. And not just in trade and goods and services, but also in terms of financial assets and real foreign direct investment types of assets,
And
that the sort of
how it affects
extracting
you.
anything from that is increasingly impossible. And the only
Sure.
thing you
And
can do is by basically tearing everything down and putting it back together.
right. And for consumers, I mean, there's legitimate reasons to have barriers. If there was complete free trade, no tariffs anywhere, we'd all be driving Chinese cars because they're coming to this country at 10 grand a piece. You know, I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Well, we wouldn't all be. Or there's another explanation, because there's a lot of intra-industry trade, right? I mean, you know,
Right.
we can buy a Ford pickup, or I can buy a Toyota pickup, and you know, I have a preference towards Toyotas, and you know, there's a big sort of strand in the international trade literature which focuses on basically like countries buy like things from each other. So
Right.
why is BMW sold in the United States, or why does Germany buy Fords? You know, this. Because we want Fords, we want BMWs. We don't want just Chinese cars. Yeah, the market for maybe the Chinese will boot out some of the sort of higher priced, low cost cars, but
Well,
other cars will keep trading. I mean, that's
I
just
mean,
the.
China has is the largest market for Buicks. There's Buick production facilities in China. But Chinese vehicles are completely banned in the United States. I mean, it's not even, it's beyond the tariff because we are, it's very a protectionist piece of legislation. We
Very
would like
protectionist.
the Chinese to ban American cars, but we ban all of their vehicles in the United States.
In the United States, I mean, a lot of these tariffs are, well, how we historically have thought of tariffs, right, is it's a punitive measure to get countries to promote more free trade. So generally speaking, in the United States, we have put on tariffs because we believe that some country's done some sort of unfair trade practice, which undermines our industry. So, you know, one of the most famous examples was Fujifilm, right, in the 1990s, 1980s. And Fuji was accused of dumping film in the US market to basically put Kodak out of
Right.
business. And then they would try to take over all of film in the film business and have monopoly power in the United States. Similarly, with during the Bush, the second Bush and Obama administrations, both of them imposed tariffs on tires, because again, the Americans complained that there was some sort of either dumping by the way, dumping is referred to when you price in a foreign country below the marginal cost of production, the cost of producing. If the price that you sell in the foreign country is below that, that's dumping. Or they subsidize tire production, and you know, it's like, well, this is hurting our production. And so, in sort of retaliation for your trade policy, we're going to impose our own trade policy. But of course, the usual channels was we go to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, say, hey, look, you know, here's their cost of producing film, or here's their cost of producing tires, here's what they're selling in the United States. We need to protect our industry because they are underpricing their imports. And so we want to raise a tariff, and the WTO goes back and forth, and we have these arbitration, and then they say, yes, seems like a reasonable thing to do, or no, it's not a reasonable thing to do. And that's how you impose a tariff, but it's usually on an industry, right? So we've had a trade war with Canada for what, I don't know, since the Reagan administration, because we
Right.
claim the provinces have been subsidizing softwood lumber exports. And so we impose a tariff on that to protect our own domestic timber industry. Well, that trade war went through the WTO. It's an ongoing. I've lost track of it. But suffice to say, that's generally how it works. But the tariffs that we have now are not a tariff to protect any given industry. It's not a tariff to protect the tires or the wood or the film. It's a blanket tariff on everything.
I
And
know, and the
that
real
is,
thing, right, the
I mean, to be
real issue,
honest, to be honest, to be to
yeah.
be perfectly honest, if you're going to impose a tariff, it's better to blanket everything at the same rate, because it does not have the, because everybody's prices rise the same, and it doesn't have the same resource distributional effects. If you favor one type of industry over the other, and you tilt the market in its favor, you tend to move resources from relatively efficient industries into relatively inefficient industries. And so you get a redistribution of ter I'm sorry, of
Right.
resources from good to bad industries. So that's why we like income taxes, because it doesn't tilt distribution of resources in any one way. This is why we economists don't like mortgage forgiveness in your taxes, because it tends to put people into a situation where they redistribute their
Sure.
income towards buying more house than they need. So to be fair, if you're going to do it all at 10%, everybody at
Right.
10%, period, or everybody at 3%.
Sure. Well,
But
the
again, generally,
administration, let me just slip one second.
all right.
The administration has claimed, that we got screwed. We're getting screwed by all of our friends and enemies on these trade deals, that we've never negotiated a good trade agreement, and they all suck, basically. I've been involved in some of these, and I thought our negotiators are pretty smart and pretty shrewd. And we don't usually do a deal that isn't in our interest in some way or not. So if you look at, the situation in place, sure, every situation can be improved, primarily because circumstances change, and industries change, and public appetite changes, and all that sort of thing. Do you think we had, we got screwed by everybody, and we need to fight back and retaliate because the situation has been unfair against the United States without exception?
Well, before I answer that question, I'll just mention that if you look at the tariffs, the way they're structured, the way that the Trump administration tariff structured the tariffs, there is a minimum 10% tariff. About 30% of the economies in the world or countries in the world have a tariff, one of these tariffs attached to it. The rest of them do not. And the countries that do not have that tariff that's different than 10%, all of those countries, we have a trade surplus with them. So by the definition that Trump is using, we're actually using, say, Australia. We have a positive trade balance with Australia. So if you're going to use that definition that we're being screwed if we have a trade deficit, well, Australia has a trade deficit with the United States. Are we screwing them? If you're going to use that language. Okay. So
Right.
now, next thing. No, I mean, countries benefit from trade. It's not a zero-sum game. Trump's belief in a trade deficit is kind of mercantilist, right? This kind of lost favor in when, like 1800. So we're kind of living in the zero-sum game where if we trade and we have a trade deficit, we're somehow getting screwed because we have a trade deficit. Now, that's not true. We benefit from trade. It's a, a lot of economists think of trade as a productivity shock, a positive productivity shock. Right, I can turn my corn into a car. Watch me do it. I sell my corn, I go buy a car. That's a productivity shock. That's an income shock that improves my well-being. I have a trade deficit with a grocery store, as do all of us, presumably, right? Because I don't want to produce my own groceries. I don't know how to make corn flakes, so I go buy it. That's a deficit. But I don't take classes at the University of Montana. I don't consume University of Montana services. But they pay me, so they have a trade deficit with me. So I take my income and go buy stuff that I need because that's how it works. And if I can get something cheaper at Costco than I can at Albertsons, then I'll go to Costco. Same thing. If I can get a Vietnamese firm to produce cell phones cheaper than I can get it at China, I will go to Vietnam. And we sign that contract, and that makes everybody better off. The Vietnamese are better off because they sell more exports, so their income rises. They get some productivity gains. We are better off because we can use our resources in ways that we are better at. We're not very good at putting together iPhones, but we're really good at making movies, or we're really good at banking services, or we're really good at software engineering, and we're good at making airplanes.
You know,
Yeah.
a week into this tariff and trade kind of instability, who do you think the big winners are in, in the global trade kind of landscape, and who are the big losers?
Well, I mean, here's my fear. If these tariffs are quasi-permanent, and by permanent, I don't know what that means anymore, right? So let's
Right.
just even say that it's over the foreseeable future, which is, let's just assume that the tariffs will end when Trump leaves office. The losers are American consumers. For
American
consumers
sure.
are going to face higher prices. It's going to be a one-time shock. Prices are going to rise. So COVID caused a 20% one-time increase in prices. Now inflation has slowed down, but prices are now about 20% higher than they were 5 or 6 years ago. Permanently. They're permanently higher. So
Right.
we're going to have that. We're going to have another permanent increase in prices. I don't know what that's going to be. If it's going to be 5%, it might be 20%. Who knows? Well, the thing is we're restricting imports coming to our country. So all the countries that we're importing from will start looking for alternative markets. So the Chinese might start selling more to Brazil or to Russia or to Europe or to South Africa. So they're going to see their imports rise, which is actually going to cause prices for those countries to fall. So now you're going to start seeing prices in countries with increased amount of foreign imports coming in. There's an excess supply, so prices are going to start to fall. So you actually might see a bifurcation of inflation rates between the United States consumer and the consumer in Belgium or Moscow or wherever. That's a loser. The winners are going to be those consumers, because if China starts rechanneling its production towards other parts of the world, then presumably they're going to start seeing their prices fall. Other losers, I think, are going to be American manufacturing. When we start increasing the cost of production, we did with steel. Who's the first to cry, right? It's American manufacturers need steel. I was talking to a friend of mine who's CFO over at Big Sky, and he was saying that, when we imposed tariffs on Canada and for a variety of other reasons, that they increased the price of cans, and not only that, but what the Canadian can manufacturer let them do was basically split a shipment of cans into four, and now they're like, you can't buy a fourth of a container of cans. You have to buy the full container yourself. So those kinds of manufacturing costs for smaller manufacturers, which is particularly important in Canada, I'm sorry, Montana, we have a lot of small manufacturers. Those costs are going to go up. Is it going to put them out of business? I don't know. And then when we start thinking about retaliatory tariffs, so Montana exports a lot of agricultural production to Canada, China, Korea, a couple other places, Belgium of all places. Those retaliatory tariffs will start to hurt our
Montanans.
Montanans.
Yeah.
And so is the big winner in all of this China in a lot of ways?
Potentially. I'm not saying it's gonna be the winner, and I guess the nuclear thing would be that the United States becomes an isolated country and the rest of the world engages in global trade, and we isolate ourselves. And that's not good.
So assuming that's correct, which I think most economists agree with your analysis, I haven't heard any of that.
Right.
That have differed, except the U.S. Commerce Secretary Rudnick.
Right.
So, who thinks this is a good idea, and what do they think's going to be the positive outcome for America from this?
Well, when you find out, you let me know. I don't know.
Scott
Well,
Bessent.
housing prices are probably going to rise because we're losing workers in construction, for other reasons. One thing that has not been discussed too much that I have seen in the press is what's going to be the impact on our interest rates. This is my financial market nuclear thing. So, for every dollar that the United States spend on a Japanese car, a dollar leaves the United States. Well, that dollar's got to come back. I mean, it's a balance. It's basically just an account, right? Out in. They have to balance. Now, what Japan does, we send them a dollar, we buy I don't know, whatever we buy a Lexus. So now Japan's holding that dollar. Well, Japan, we have a trade deficit with Japan. So Japan, of that dollar, Japan does not spend 100% of it on a Ford. So let's say it spends 75% on a Ford. It's still got 25 cents. What does it do with that 25 cents? It buys American assets. It buys bonds. It buys stocks. So part of the reason that the United States has enjoyed relatively low interest rates is because foreign countries are buying our debt. This has helped finance our budget deficit. Now, about a third of US debt is held by foreign countries. About a third of US debt is held by agencies, the Fed, Education Department, et cetera, and the rest of it is split up amongst bondholders, pension funds, et cetera. Those are very rough, but the third is about right for foreign held debt. Well, if we quit sending more dollars abroad because of our shrinking trade deficit, they're going to have less money to turn around and buy our assets. That's going to start increasing our interest rates. Moreover, taxes are slated to go down if Trump gets his way. Tariffs are not going to make up. I think for every dollar that we would have gotten in income taxes, the tariffs are going to bring in like 25 cents on the dollar, something like that, ballpark. So we're not making up. Our deficit's going to get worse. So to finance our deficit, we're going to have to issue more debt. Simple math, assuming we don't change our government expenditure. So if we increase the supply of debt and people are not able to buy as much debt, that's going to push the price of debt down and push up interest rates.
Sure.
And that's
So,
problematic. So our rates are going to go up. Now, at the same time, the Fed is going to start seeing inflation kick in. The Fed has seen relatively strong labor markets, so it has a little bit of wiggle room of what to do and can probably focus on inflation. Well, if it starts seeing inflation ramp up, we won't see it in the most recent inflation numbers. It won't happen until April, May, June is when we'll really start seeing the impacts of tariffs. When they start seeing inflation jump, well, they're going to have to respond with higher interest rates. They're going to have to raise the federal funds rate to fight that inflation. So we're going to get a double kicker with the Fed raising rates and a potential outcome where foreigners don't buy as much of our debt.
Arnie, sorry, Tino. Why do you think I'm going to ask Arnie this because he can be, he's unfettered. He doesn't have a, he can talk about political machinations here. Arnie,
Sure.
why is Trump doing this? Why is the administration doing this? In your, what do you think?
Well, I think that, I mean, trying to not, go off the deep end, from a rational kind of point,
Yeah,
Trump
rational.
personally and everybody that's around him, whether they believe it or not, have to toe what he says or else they're out. If Harold Ludnick, the Secretary of Commerce, doesn't agree with him on this, he'll just fire him and bring in somebody who does.
Right.
So he's got that kind of, power, and he uses it that way. He's always had a very primitive personal understanding of tariffs. He's never liked him before he was president, whatever. He doesn't like him. He thinks we get, we get screwed.
No, he does like tariffs. He
No, I
likes
mean, he likes tariffs. He
right.
doesn't like the way we've been handled in tariffs. He
Right.
thinks tariffs should pay for everything. He believes, the pre-1913 way of doing things.
Right.
There should be no income tax on people. There should be no tax on the rich. Tariffs should pay for everything. And so now he has a cadre of yes people around him to try this. Secondarily, he is just a transactor personality. He also thinks that, maybe he doesn't believe that 100%, but I mentioned earlier, this is economic diplomacy. You tell the Chinese you're going to charge 104% and screw them in the US market, maybe you can get something out of them that you didn't have before. That's his negotiating
But
style.
what, where does he, but where does he see himself like at the end of this? Like, where does
With
he want this?
hotels in Gaza
No,
and property
seriously?
in. Yeah, I think this is all personal. I mean, if you're asking my, opinion on this, if he would have lost the election, he'd probably go to jail. He won the election. He has a lot of vindictiveness, and that's showing its way in lots of other things like economic attacks on law firms that opposed him, not
Right.
allowing law firms to go into government buildings. I mean, if George Bush Senior or Junior or Obama or any president up to this tried that, try to threaten a law firm like he's done, they'd be out of office in 5 minutes. So he has that kind of personality and that
So
kind
he's
of style.
vindictive.
And he's vindictive, and he didn't go to jail because he won. And he has a combination of trying to this is not a well thought out economic theory. He has no economic theory on his part.
So this is
He doesn't,
gut.
he likes tariffs, so we're gonna impose tariffs.
So this is
And
emotional and this is gut. This is not rooted in any
right,
kind of, he doesn't have an end game.
and he has nobody to stop him. There's nobody to stop him. The only person that can stop him is Congress, and they feel intimidated as well.
And they're right. So Tino, is there, are there any other examples of there being such a sharp kind of or such a significant impact to the markets as we've seen in these in this last week? I think they've estimated it to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 to $8 trillion of loss in just seven. It's higher.
Much higher than that.
Okay, so
About 12
Tino,
trillion.
what is it, and has there been anything in the last 20 years that has kind of come close to this?
Well, that's what I mentioned when we started out about NASDAQ losing 1,200, 1,500 points over a year and a half. And it lost 2,000 points, I think is what we said,
3 days.
in 3 days. Now, again, in percentage change terms, the first one was a bit bigger, but it was over a year and a half.
Right, sustained.
We lost 2,000 points in NASDAQ. That's just NASDAQ in 3 days.
And
So,
the market is so jittery that I'll switch to a Dow because I follow that a little better.
right.
You know, on Tuesday of this week, the Dow started up off 1,700 points up, and then Trump said something, and
No,
it
there
dropped.
was a rumor. No, some guy put an X. Wait,
Yeah,
or
a
whatever.
rumor,
Yeah, they're just like, Trump may, you
and
know,
it dropped not only
tariffs.
17,
Boom.
but
The
another
stock market
300.
rose $2.5 trillion were gained in like 1 hour. And then another 12 seconds later, all $2.5 trillion were gone.
You know, and
So
if you,
the point here
wow.
is that we are living in a situation right now where there is so much uncertainty and people are looking, trying to look so hard into that crystal ball to figure out something. And
Right.
nobody knows what's going on. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was mentioning that when the financial crisis was unraveling, this was not a new thing for us. We didn't maybe know the extent of how bad it was going to be. We didn't know how long prolonged it was going to be. We didn't know if it was going to be shallow, if it was going to be deep. It ended up being far deeper than anybody expected, but we kind of had a playbook. It was very easy for Treasury Secretary Paulson to rally his troops, got the Fed to rally their troops, and they kind of had a plan like in about a day. I mean, much like COVID, like we had a vaccine for COVID in like 12 days because they sent out the genome and all that kind of stuff, and they had it ready to go. The only thing that slowed it down was all the testing. So they had a plan in place in a day or two, what to do. I don't know if it was a day. We don't have a plan for this. I mean, when the stock market goes up $2.5 trillion at nine and is back down $200 trillion by 10, we don't know what's going on. There's so much misinformation. There's so much noise, and finding a signal is so hard to find
Sure. And there's
that
no
we
one,
don't
I
know
don't
what's going to
care
happen.
how.
And this is going to undermine investment in this country potentially for years, which is going to
I was going to ask that. What's the
slow the
long-term
economy.
effect of this?
Well, right now, firms don't know what to do. They don't know if they should believe the tariffs are going to be long-lasting. So they're starting to halt investment. So we're seeing, and Arnie, you probably know more about this than I, but initial public offerings are down.
Yes.
People are literally stopping producing their plants, like in the middle of production of plants. So their plants are just going to sit there, I don't know,
Idle.
fallible, however you want to call it, right?
Yeah, Apple
So
just
we're not,
announced
and
stopping a
what,
plant late, 900 jobs gone.
right. Who just laid off 900 people? Solansen or the Chrysler guys. They just
Right.
laid off 900 people.
Stellantis.
Solantis. That
Right.
was yesterday. This was 2 days after the tariffs were announced. So people are putting all those kinds of things on hold. Now, the problem is investment today turns into output tomorrow. And if we have slower investment today, that means we're going to have slower output in the future.
Right, the investment that's going on by all the major guys that believe, that are, trying to figure this all out is mostly shorting the market.
Right.
Figure it's going to go down and they're going to make money off of that.
Right.
And
But then
that
once
doesn't
you
do
get
anything for the economic vitality of the
the. Does
economy.
not. And moreover, again, going back to my discussion about how if we send a dollar to Japan, they send some of it back in the terms of assets. Part of that is foreign direct investment. And so
Right.
foreign firms do invest a lot in the United States. Cognizant is Indian, right? So they invest, they're an Indian company. That's foreign direct
Right.
investment for us. If Cognizant pulls out of Missoula because of the current, now they might want to stay here because now they're inside of the border, so they're safe.
Right.
But they might choose to not continue to invest in Cognizant. Honda may not continue to invest in Marysville, Ohio's Honda plant there, where they make Accords and buses, and that could slow the economy down too. I mean, Japan has spent trillions of dollars of investment in the United States,
Yeah.
trillions, and that could go away, or at least be seriously curtailed. And again, If Honda chooses not to build a new plant in Marysville, Ohio, that improves productivity and does all this, well, that's not maybe going to have repercussions today, but it will 5, 6, 10 years into the future.
Sure. And I have not seen anyone articulate in any reasonable way. I mean, this discussion that we're having here among three Missoula guys, one who's an economist, two that are just, radio, personalities.
Mandrakes.
This depth of conversation hasn't even happened in the administration. I would doubt, the way they calculate the tariffs is, basically chat, they're asking AI to figure it out for them. So I have not been able to see from any reasonable person how average American is going to benefit from this. All I can see is it's going to cost them more money. And they're not going to make any more money. Salaries aren't going to go up. When you're going to have to pay $8,000 or $9,000 or $3,500 for an iPhone. The other thing that you didn't mention, Tino, is once prices go up, they never come down.
Well, that's part of
Tariff
it.
disappears, the price is going to stay up.
That's what I was saying, is it's a permanent price increase. It's not, so prices will go up, let's say 10%, and then inflation kicks on at 2%. Well, we're at 10% plus the 2% rates of inflation. So that's what happened during COVID. If you look at COVID price level, not inflation, if you look at the price level, there's a structural shift in price of about
Go into any
20%.
Missoula restaurant and order a hamburger. It's $5 more than it was, 4 years ago.
Right. And on top of that, so let's think about a couple other things. Number one, so estimates on the cost per family of just the tariffs is between $3,000 to $6,000 per family per year. Now, that does not, as far as I can tell, factor in the higher inflation.
No, it does not.
That's a form of tax. Higher inflation is a form of tax. On top of that, we could see the dollar weaken because as other countries quit buying our assets, now most of movements in exchange rates has nothing to do with goods and services. So just to put things in perspective, and I'm kind of making this number up, but it's an educated guess. Something like, I don't know, $20 trillion of goods and services trade happen in a year globally. So that's buying cars, that's buying Marvel movies, that's buying trips to, I don't know, no, Nepal or whatever. About $20 trillion a week exchanges hands for purchases and sales of financial assets. So most of the exchange rate movements are happening because of exchange of people buying and selling currency to buy and sell assets. If the appetite for buying American assets goes down, we will see the dollar depreciate, and that will be a further tax because the price will, in dollar terms, will have risen just from the depreciation of the dollar. So that's another thing we have to think about. I have nothing. Right now, I've been having this discussion for a week or two now. So it's I don't see the only light I see at the end of the tunnel is that all of this is noise. Next week, they say, "Oh, we're just kidding." Good luck. That's
But they've already done damage to our relationships, unrepairable.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's repairable is that Trump will be gone. And then
Right.
maybe people will say after Trump, well, they might not trust the American voter to vote a reasonable person in again, but maybe this will a reasonable economic person, right? But maybe this will change people's minds and go, yeah, this doesn't work.
Well, our democratic system is at the point now, where there's no ability to stop people at the top from acting on their whims. There's no way to stop it. You can't get four Republican senators to stop. I mean, four Republican senators would stop this. Would have to go through congressional hearings. It would have to go through a bunch of filtering, and there would be a way to examine it in a reasonable way. And that's the way it's always operated. Somehow, there's been a fracture in all of that. And some of us saw it coming. Some of them didn't. Some people don't care. Some people think it's good. There's some people that support a more authoritarian way of running the country, and there's nothing here to stop them. So we're operating on whims. We don't know. It's like let's try this experiment with the whole country and see what happens. I really haven't researched it, but we'll just impose lots of tariffs and see if it creates jobs. Oh, Didn't do that. Well, so I'll try. It doesn't affect him personally. It doesn't affect Elon Musk. I saw the other day someone said that if you put on your raincoat and found $20 in your pocket, the average person found $20 in their pocket, they could go out and get a cup of coffee, or you go to Starbucks with a buddy, they'd be happy that maybe we could have a breakfast. That's the equivalent of Elon Musk finding $37 million in his pocket.
Right.
He can go out and buy a company. He can go out and buy a company.
From an academic, academic perspective, this is a moment in time that it's no, it's not a case study. It's a reality that you're studying in real time.
Yeah, I never, I think most of us never think that something like this is going to happen. I mean, I didn't think the financial crisis was going to happen, and certainly not be as bad as it turned out to be. I didn't think that I'd go through a COVID or some sort of pandemic and have to deal with economic consequences of that as well. And then to have this on top of everything. And you know what? So let's do a little history lesson. 1907, we have a financial crisis. 1907, Knickerbocker Bank in New York City speculated in copper prices and tried to buy the mine up here in Anaconda, and tried to corner the copper price market. And copper price market fell out of the floor and bankrupted Knickerbocker Bank. So back in those days, banks set up these little 6 to 7 bank consortiums where they'd all kind of keep an eye on each other. Like if one bank was doing something and needed some money, Bank B would lend them money, sort of as a safety kind of measure to prevent banks from doing bad things. And so Knickerbocker Bank did this little speculation in copper, basically precipitated the 1907 crisis. Actually, the parallels of now are just becoming ridiculous. So 10 years later, we had a war, and we had something called the Spanish flu. Pandemic killed millions of people. All right. Parallels start to 10 years after that. Now it's not quite 10 years. A number of years after that, we started raising up tariffs. So the parallels between 1907 and 100 years later are staggeringly similar. Now, I don't know if, now, obviously, during the run-up of tariffs in the 19s and 20s and 30s, it had to use. Congress had to sort of back it, right? It's the Smoot-Hawley Act. It's not the Hoover Act. It was two congressmen. But we're having a similar kind of play between financial crisis, pandemic, and tariffs.
Tariffs.
And that's now, and then of course we know that led to the Great Depression. Not only that, but that in part precipitated a global depression.
Let's take a break on that uplifting moment. Our guest is Tino Sonor with the University of Montana, back after these words. Arnie, we are back with Tino Sonora.
So, Tino, in the midst of all of this chaos and uncertainty, for our listeners, can you give us some ray of hope or some ray of clarity about what we ought to be paying attention to in the future?
Presidents are presidents for 4 years.
Right. Back one.
What I'm seeing is that what I look for at hope is that a lot of this is just noise, and it's a negotiation tactic. It's a very costly negotiation tactic. My hope is that these tariffs are just a way of getting other countries to the table to discuss how we can free up trade. And if that's true, then I think that we can pull out of this relatively quickly. But I don't think we can hang on for much longer without it having some sort of permanent impact. So I'm looking for the signal in all the noise, and I think when that becomes a little bit more clear, then we'll have a clearer path to what's going on.
That's a good place to
Thank
put
you as
it. Yeah.
always for giving us some good insights and some good understanding of the economic condition we find ourselves here in Montana.
Yeah. And Tina, we'll see you in 100 days, okay? We're going to hold you to that.
Yeah, right.
Another
We're gonna have to do this pretty regularly
quarterly.
if this keeps up. It's gonna be yeah. We'll all look about 100 years older too, I'm
My
sure.
100 days, 100 years.
in July. Arnie, I will see you next week.
See you next week, Scott. Take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.